As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. Here we are once again to talk about United's 4-2 victory over Sheffield United, to preview Burnley this weekend, and also to do a deep dive into Manchester United's academy with a man who had exclusive access to that facility last week. That's Andy Mitten. He's here this morning. Carl Anker's here as well. And we are all in a much better mood, a much better condition, Andy, aren't we? Than we perhaps were after that semi-final pod on Sunday.
We were all shattered, weren't we? But I don't make any apologies for that. We were at the game. It was a long day for all of us. That's exactly how it was for the fans.
Yeah, true.
And if there was some emotion in there, then that's fine. I won't say anything different to what I said on Sunday, but we were all absolutely whacked, weren't we?
Yeah. Were we embarrassing? Carl, I don't know who's dubbed us that this week, but yeah.
Who could say? But then yeah. I'm reaching the point where most people I care about think I'm embarrassing in some shape or form, so I just lean into it.
Just part of getting old, isn't it basically? The descent into middle age. We've been re-energised by a 4-2 victory over Sheffield United, Carl, as well, haven't we, to a degree, I guess? I mean, there was at least some positives to bring to the party from the game last night.
It was a win, and... Sorry.
Are you sure we're in a better condition?
Yeah, where did that come from? Yeah. It was a win, and yeah, focus on the positives. That was a very, very good showcase of why Bruno Fernandes is so important to Manchester United and has been so important for the last, I want to say, 4.5 seasons now. Also, a really good showcase for Harry Maguire, who I think will probably end up winning April's Player of the Month award for United.
Yeah, Bruno Fernandes, definitely the takeaway from last night, I think. I mean, his form, Andy, in front of goal in particular in recent weeks has been a real step up. 7 goals in his last 6 Premier League appearances for United. That's as many as he had in his previous 45. And also, the brace against Sheffield United means he's scored 2-plus goals in back-to-back Premier League games for the first time, which is surprising considering his form from 2020 onwards for United in those early days. But yeah, Carl's right. It underlined... He's the centre of this team, isn't he? Undoubtedly.
Perish to thought where this team would be without Bruno Fernandes. He's now the team's top scorer. Manchester United's top scorer is not a forward, which is great for Bruno, and I'm pleased that he's playing so well. And that second goal last night was fantastic. The way that he swept the ball with his foot at such pace in front of the Stretford end was wonderful. I think his penalties have improved as well, because we've had wobbles with his penalties in the past. He missed a couple of really important ones. And if only everyone was like Bruno, but clearly they're not. That's why Manchester United are 6th and 7th in the table. Up to 6th, though. It was a good night, actually. A lot of things went United's way, Manchester United's way, not Sheffield United's way, in the end. And it was a game that was decided late on, like every time Manchester United play, it seems to be like this. But combined with the fact that Newcastle United lost and Chelsea had lost as well, this week could have been much, much worse. I would add Liverpool into losing as a reason to give us smiles, but that's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because it's probably meaning that Manchester City are going to win the league again. But yeah, Bruno, all over the place, Manchester United's best player. Glad Carl mentioned Harry Maguire. because he scored another good header. He's another player who's in form and needed, given that there's four or five central defenders who are out as well.
He's not even fully fit, Andy, either, is he? He's just putting himself out there game after game after game. And I know we've talked about it on the podcast before, and we have mentioned it, you know, fairly frequently, but I think it says something to his commitment, his desire. I mean, if you rewind a few months, the stick that Harry Maguire was getting every single time he probably left his house, to be honest, he is emerging from that now. I saw someone on Twitter this week say that, maybe this is a bit of a stretch, but saying that he should be up in consideration for player of the season just because of the way he's turning perceptions around once again.
Really is, and I made a very serious point last night that if he carries on his headed goal-scoring form of the last 4 days, he's going to win the Ballon d'Or. If he carries it on for 1 year and scores a header every 4 days, then that'll be impressive. You know, on Sunday, I didn't say this, but I watched Harry outside the dressing room, and he was the only Manchester United player there, and he spoke to Coventry City players for probably 20 minutes. And this wasn't, oh, look at me, I'm mixing. This was just, he knew half of them because he probably played with some of them at Sheffield United or at Hull or at Leicester City. And I just watched it and thought, these things do matter. It's not the be all and end all, but a lot of the other, you know, you wouldn't have got Anthony, for example, there because, well, he can't speak English, and that's not a slight against him.
I can't imagine he would have been too popular in the Coventry dressing room after that. Either.
Probably the worst example I could have chosen there.
Yeah.
But it was just good, you know. Normally I've seen coaches swapping, but it was all on Harry. He's massive as well. He just stood there with his flip-flops on. And as he walked back in the dressing room, he saw me, and he basically, his response was like, FFS, as in we just about got through that one.
Yeah.
But I think he can do it from a point of more comfort now than the places where he's been.
You don't necessarily have to wear the armband to be a leader. And I think this new role he's got in the team, where the team is playing a slightly simplified version of what they were doing last year, or I'd say last year before Lisandro Martinez got injured. And he's playing a bit deeper than he has been last season under Ten Hag. Suits him a bit more. He can go under the radar a bit more. Because he's not wearing the armband, he doesn't have to go out and talk to press after defeats in the same way that Bruno Fernandes has done or whatnot, so we don't get that sort of memeified, sad Harry Maguire face.
He's needed to be protected in that sense as well. I think the United media team have certainly played their role in helping to turn the perception of Harry around and managing that carefully, because it has been turned around, Carl, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And I think a lot of United's best performers have been players. Then there's been loads of discussion about whether or not they're good enough to turn United into a quote-unquote winning team. Is Harry Maguire a Premier League winning centre-back? We don't know. We do know that this season he's been one of the most consistent and most important centre-backs to United season. Is Diogo Dalot, you know, going through this season, we all didn't know if Dalot was going to be the starting right-back or not, or if he's a Premier League winning right-back. At the moment, he's the most important right-back to this United team. Is Scott McTominay a Premier League winning midfielder? Maybe, question mark, don't know. He's been very, very important to United getting points on the board. And the same thing with Bruno Fernandes. Is Fernandes the type of person who, if you build everything around him, can win you a Premier League title? Maybe. Depends on who you build around him. But right now, in this less than title race winning Manchester United team, he's so important. Fernandes makes bad teams good, and he can make teams better. And I think that's so important, especially when, I mean, one thing that was really important about the Sheffield United team was he was the 10. He really was the centre of everything, and he was given licence to be the playmaker, and everything revolved around him, like we saw in 2021 and his better seasons previous.
Yeah, he was that good that he helped ensure that Laurie Whitwell didn't have a wasted time waking up in the middle of the night in Vietnam to watch Manchester United. Here's his latest voice note diary.
Hello guys, I'm getting into the swing of this, so I thought I'd just send another one after watching another early morning, late night performance from Man United. It is 4:30 in the morning in Da Nang, which is just up the road from Hoi An. It's been described to me as the Miami of Vietnam. because it's basically got a beach, a long beach, 15 kilometres with the city right next to it. I'm not sure I quite see it like that, but it is actually quite lively still. There's people on the beach doing exercises, going for a swim, and there's food sellers in the little stalls by the roadside selling banh mi and other Vietnamese cuisine. So it is a fun atmosphere. I've just come from a fun atmosphere in a bar that was showing the game. It stays open 24/7, and it was full of Liverpool fans because they were showing that game as well. So I was the only United fan in there. Don't know what that says about United's popularity over here, but it was nice that United weren't the ones with the inquest after them, I suppose. And yeah, a couple of points just from the game that I thought were interesting. I think that just shows what Bruno Fernandes can actually do in a team when they're dominating the ball high up the pitch. I think he's been exposed at times when it's been that kind of transition game, or he's not supporting the press. But actually, if you give him the ball, consistently, he can pick passes. I thought he was brilliant, real captain's performance. I know it was against Sheffield United, and I know it was chaotic, but the fact that actually United went behind a couple of times and still were composed and sort of still picking their passes, I thought at least that showed something. And Bruno was obviously at the forefront of it. And yeah, it was just Wes Fodringham, wasn't it, turning into prime Brad Friedel. It reminded me of those games when he used to play for Blackburn, and it seemed like United could never score, and he always had a worldie against him. It could have been much more comfortable evening if he'd not pulled off some really good saves. But overall, good win, and I'm just picturing Andy's delighted face as he's looking at that league table with United on plus goal difference. Wow, heady times. Looking forward to what you guys have to say. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Thank you, Laurie, as always, for doing that. Andy, your face was a picture when you realised that Manchester United had a plus one goal difference.
Plus one. I was looking at it for a bit. Scored 50, conceded 50. Thinking, is there some sort of nice symmetry to all this? And then I thought, no, because you look at the teams around you and you realise that the team have not scored enough goals. Cannot finish the league on a minus goal difference. It just can't happen. And it's pretty shameful that we're at the end of April and it was minus until yesterday. So to score four goals, I think it's only the fourth time this season that United have won by more than one goal. So that shows how much of a scrape it's been in a lot of matches. And yet, for most of the game, Manchester United were not ahead. And it was a real worry, because if the team wouldn't have won, I think you would have seen a massive increase in pressure on the manager. So there was a lot of relief for individuals, for Rasmus Højlund, who scored for the first time in a couple of months, for the four goals, for a win. The mood's been pretty low despite beating Coventry City on penalties the other day. So it was needed. And Sheffield United, as we saw in COVID, can really trip up Manchester United. That was one of the shocks of the COVID era at Old Trafford.
Last time United were top, wasn't it?
It was.
Going into that game.
It was.
Yeah, January 21, was it?
Correct. Something like that. So, top of the league, you got a team near the bottom, I think they're probably bottom, and you lose. And Manchester United, as you say, have not been top since that point.
We should mention Rasmus Højlund, actually. Dan Sheldon was there last night for us, and his report on The Athletic focused in on Højlund getting back on the score sheet, Carl. Incredible, some of the stats in here. So since the brace he scored away at Luton Town, Højlund had played 612 minutes in all competitions for United, but managed only 7 shots, 4 of them being blocked and just 2 hitting the target, which I thought was crazy. He'd only touched the ball in the opponent's penalty area 23 times. I mean, that's really bad, isn't it?
It is. It's a striker that's been starved of service. I do want to bring up what I've said in previous ones. There are times when the ball is whipped in and Rasmus isn't connecting with the ball because McTominay has stood there. McTominay took the goal very well against Coventry, and it was one of those things where I was glad McTominay was stood there because Rasmus seemed to have missed the cross. So those two have an interesting relationship. But these are the teething problems you have when you have a young striker. These are also the teething problems you have where you have 2, 3, perhaps even 4 youngish, somewhat inconsistent wingers. So throughout the season, Ten Hag's wanted an inverted winger style. So Rashford, Garnacho and Antony are meant to cut inside and attempt to shoot or try and play in through balls. And all of them, to varying degrees, haven't been able to find Rasmus in the way that he wants. There was that fantastic interview he gave to TNT Sport after Wolverhampton Wanderers, and he said, if he makes a, if one of those players look up in the final third and Rasmus isn't there, they're allowed to yell at him. But, you know, on the other hand, if he does make the run and the winger doesn't play, he's going to yell at them. And we've seen that a lot more in recent weeks. I've seen Rasmus yell at McTominay. I've seen Rasmus yell at Garnacho. I've seen him out of conversation with Mainoo. So this goal will do him good. And I think his goal tally now is 14. And that's, you know, reasonable for a player in his first season like this. There is still, you know, there are 20 goals missing in this squad. There is, unless there's a huge upturn in penalty luck, United will definitely need an extra body. No, let me correct myself. Manchester United will need two extra bodies who can play at number nine, because we have to remember Anthony Martial will be going away, and they'll need someone to fill Martial's space. And I still think they need another striker on top of that as well. But with Rasmus, he's encouraging, and you do get the sense that if things are retooled everywhere else, he can start getting 2 to 3 shots per game on a consistent basis, because that's what you need. Strikers need to have loads of opportunities, because strikers, even the best ones, do miss more than they score.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, two shots on target. I know he's missed some games through injury during that spell, Andy, but two shots on target in 2.5 months. I mean, that's not, by any metric, any team, anywhere, that's not great. But I thought it was really pointed last night that when he scored, rather than going off to celebrate, which he would have forgiven a young striker for doing when he'd gone that long without a goal, he immediately turned around, pointed at Bruno Fernandes and went over to celebrate with him. That relationship needs to be better. I know there's been stories and so on this week, but just watching it with your own eyes throughout this season, the number 10 and the number 9 have to have more of a link-up than those two have had.
They do. I like Rasmus. I like his attitude. He's a grafter. He's still learning. He's not getting the service that he needs. An extra striker or two, as Carl says, is the priority for Manchester United. I think it's going to be really difficult in the summer. I think the transfer window is going to be really difficult with all the restrictions. I would lower expectations, unfortunately, from the conversations I'm having, because Manchester United can't just go in and spend away out of a problem because of all the restrictions. But I think he's had a good first season, a creditable number of goals. They've come in spurts. They often do as strikers. You know, people tend to look back and go, well, he got 15 goals that season. They tend to come in clumps, and he has been injured, as you say. Go back to the great United sides. He had four strikers. This team has only had one real true striker, and that's been a massive problem for Manchester United. So bring someone else in. Hope that some of the players around him are more in form. The relationship with Bruno could become a key one. Bruno's playing really well, so that is encouraging. And the team scored 4 goals, and 3 of them come from those 2 individuals, so good.
There's a very good piece on The Athletic from Michael Cox, went out last week, looking at the most common partnerships that go into the final third, looking at every single Premier League team. And Manchester United's most common partnership is Bruno playing a diagonal ball to a winger. So it tends to be Bruno passing out wide to one of Rashford or one of Garnacho and whatnot. And I looked at this a bit earlier in the season when we were talking about Bruno isn't finding Højlund enough. And in a piece I wrote on Bruno in February, I talked to Danny Webber about this as well. And he explained, you know, that the through ball that your number 10 passes to your number 9, very, very hard to do at top level, because defences just want to pack deep and they want to block that. So very often when United do want to attack and do want to get the ball to Rasmus, it's going to be Bruno wide and then it's going to be the cross. Now, the issue about that is Rashford's first instinct isn't to cross. Garnacho's first instinct isn't to cross. Anthony's first instinct isn't to cross, and his crossing is off his left foot, and defenders are wise to that and they know how to block that. So to get the ball from Bruno into Rasmus is going to take fine-tuning, not just from Bruno himself and not just from the runs Rasmus wants, but also there's going to need greater support and greater variation from what the wingers want. It was Garnacho and Anthony in the first half, and Garnacho, I think, had a pretty solid game. I think if he improves his ball striking when he's running at pace, he probably could have got 2 goals himself. And I think things did improve as well once Ahmad came on partway through the second half as well. So there are options there if Ten Hag wants to further refine what he wants from that front three, front four unit.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, another feature of Manchester United's night was reaching the historic landmark of 250 academy graduates playing in Manchester United's first team. Ethan Wheatley, no matter what he does in his career, will always be remembered for this incredible moment. For the entire club, I don't think it should be underestimated quite how big an achievement this is. Harry Robinson, who works for the club and also wrote an excellent book as well called The Men Who Made Manchester United, which I'd recommend to any Manchester United fan, tweeted last night about the 250 landmark, but he also said that around 20,000 combined appearances have been made by those academy graduates over a century of football for United. 440 trophies won, and the academy graduates as well have been born in 20 different countries, so it shows it's a worldwide record for Manchester United as well. I mean, Andy, you've had exclusive access to the academy, which we'll talk about in a moment because the pieces you've written are fascinating. But Ethan Wheatley getting this record, he'll never be forgotten now, will he, no matter what?
No, he'll become the latest, and it's fantastic. And he's had a really good few weeks because he scored in the 18s final the night before. And when I was there last week and I went in for 10 hours into the academy, and please read the piece because I made 30 pages of notes and spent all last week writing it. And the feedback's been massive to it, so it's definitely worth doing. But just recently, Ethan scored 4 goals for the 18s on the Saturday, played for the 21s on a Monday, and then was then pulled up to play for the first team. While doing that, he's had to continue his studies. He had one day off, and I met his education boss from the club, Ian Smithson. And he said, Ethan called in and said, is there any chance I can come in to do my studies? Because he's really conscientious. He's a bright boy. And this is what the academy's producing. There's not been enough strikers. You know, when a few years ago United needed to bring in Igalo, there was a pretty high-level meeting within the club.
Igalo.
I love the fact he can never say Igalo. Bless him.
Yeah. Can't say it, can I? Odion Igalo, is that right?
Yes.
Odion Igalo, yeah.
Right. Well, according to people at the club, there should never have been a need to go for him because there should have been people coming out of the academy system. And there just wasn't. And the club got together and went, why is this not happening? We've got an issue here. And you could say that it's still an issue because last season, Wout Weghorst had to be brought in, who you said was going to win the Ballon d'Or and didn't quite get to those standards.
Oh, Wout.
But Ethan's is in the moment. I'm really reluctant to say this guy's going to be the next whatever, but I think it's good to see a good young man doing well, scoring goals, and to get his first team debut. But as Nick Cox always says, I refuse to be defined by players making a debut. Mm. It's what he does next.
Yeah, Andy, it wouldn't be right, though, if he didn't have some sort of mitten link as well, as usual.
Well, there's loads. I mean, when I was in the academy last week, I was allowed access all area. I could go into any meeting, which was brilliant. I've never had this before. And I'd walk in and people, they knew I was coming. And there's like, people I didn't know would look at me and go, you relate to Steve Mitten. I used to play with him. I know everything about you, so don't write anything bad. Because all my family played football. So last night, my brother, Jos, messaged me. He said, I used to play with Ethan's dad, Desi. And I'll read the tweet. said, yeah, I was brought in the January. We were told to get promotion. Me and Desi played up front, scored 25 goals in 18 games, got promoted. He was a bulldozer of a forward.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's our kid playing up front with his dad. I've never heard him mention him since, so I'm not even sure that they're in touch. But, yeah, non-league football, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal in Manchester. But
Desi Wheatley sounds like the archetypal non-league centre-forward as well, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, not sure he like prepared for matches like my brother did by having, you know, a couple of pints, a slice, cig, about necking about four bottles of Red Bull. But he always thought that if he had a free spray, he could get over any injuries. Our kid did like, he'd do both cruciate ligaments, but still play with a bit of free spray on it. Just a big, hard, slow, skillful centre forward, win everything in the air, and the fans absolutely loved him for that.
Brilliant. I mean, it's just an incredible record, isn't it, Carl, that Manchester United have got with their academy. We'll talk about some of the detail in Andy's piece in a moment, but just generally, I mean, it's contributed so much to the history of the club and it continues to be such a central part of Manchester United. It's something to be proud of, no doubt.
Absolutely. An academy player stretching back to 1937. That is phenomenal. And the closest team miles away. It's a record that cannot be caught. It's a record that I have been nervous about under certain post-Ferguson managers.
Louis van Gaal nearly killed it.
Nearly.
It was very, very, very close to being struck off.
My hand trembled a little bit when Mourinho was in charge as well, because I thought, oh, is he going to care about this?
He cares. He cared about it, didn't he?
Good.
I mean, Scott McTominay was his prodigy. You know, his record with youth players, he sat in his first press conference as Manchester United manager and defended it, listed some of the players who he'd given a first chance to in football. So I don't think there was any way Mourinho was destroying that record.
Good, good. And long may it continue, because this is very important. When fans of other clubs always go, oh, Manchester United like to bleat on about this, but every club has an academy and every club wants to play attacking football with this and this and this. But it's records like this. It's the way people like Nick Cox go about their jobs and talk about their jobs and talk about the highs, the lows and whatnot, where you realise this is a little bit special compared to other football clubs. And it makes me beam with great pride.
Yeah, definitely. And Andy, you've written in your piece about the way that Manchester United advertised this to families, to young players who are joining the academy as well. In their literature, they say they are the number one ranked English club for producing and developing young players. And in the piece as well, you mentioned that even this season, United have given three times, was it, the amount of minutes to teenagers in the Premier League than the top six sides combined.
United are miles ahead. And one reason I really like the United model is because it's straight, it's not corrupt. And I don't think I could say that of every different model. I love the fact that when they approach other clubs to bring players in, they go through the front door. I trust that. Spoke to loads of people. And I was a big critic of the system, by the way.
That's why you got invited, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I stand by what I wrote. It was failing. It was underfunded. The facilities were not good enough. There were loads of side issues. And even in 2019, I put it to Ed Woodward. I said, what on earth is going on here? And he gave me a half-baked answer, you know, how do you know about this? And I knew because I cared. And people were telling me because they cared as well. And I am really pleased to say that things have improved massively since then. The facilities have really improved. Carrington is a very good training ground now. And the players coming through. And I'm not saying that they're all going to become established first-team players. But what I realised is, you know so little of what is going on. You think you've got an idea because you're judging by results. So last week, the 21s lost against Liverpool at Old Trafford in front of 15,000. They almost knew that was going to happen. It was almost intentional because they go so young that they want to stretch the players and they think they can learn as much in defeat as in victory. And I can see where they're coming from. But watching them, how they bring the 7 and 8 year olds in, got some fantastic people there. You've got the old legends of the club, Tony Whelan, Dave Bushell, but you've got young coaches who are really smart. Jared Ince, who came in from a team called Manchester City 4 years ago. They had the 7 and 8 year olds playing NFL. It's not just about football. It's multifaceted. You've got young players having life-changing experiences, people who've not been on planes before, travelling around the world. So even if they leave, they've still had an amazing experience. Education is paramount to what they do. They're better footballers. They're better people. It is wonderful. It really is. And it's a totally different model to Manchester City or Chelsea, which is basically results only and move them on, sell them on. But at Manchester United, you have got a clear pathway into the first team, far better than any other club. And I think in a really difficult season for the club overall, that is one area which I think deserves praise. And it has to keep on moving, because otherwise I'll be writing those pieces again, because if you stand still, you start slipping behind straight away. And Manchester United got arrogant. They thought that that badge would bring in players, and they were used to top players coming into the club, and that they didn't need to work. But as soon as City came on, splashing the cash, and Liverpool and Chelsea, the dynamics of it changed. They became the preeminent forces in youth football.
Yeah, there's some fantastic detail in the piece, or the pieces. I'd thoroughly recommend Manchester United fans to go and read that. You'll learn a lot about the academy. There's no question about that. Just when you mentioned there about lads getting on planes and young girls getting on planes and going to far-flung places to play football, just to give you a flavour of the access that Andy had, here's an interview with the under-18s captain, Finlay McAllister. This gives you an insight into the type of characters that Manchester United are bringing through. But also listen to him when Andy asks about his highlights of his career so far, when I talk about playing in these far-flung places.
What's your name? Where are you from?
My name's Finlay McAllister and I'm from Salford.
What's your job?
Footballer.
Position?
Centre mid.
Club?
United.
Best moment of your career so far?
Trip to Indonesia with England at the World Cup.
With your club?
Trip to Mumbai with United in 2019 before COVID.
Which football club do you support?
United.
Do you go to matches?
Yeah.
Home or away?
Both.
Who'd you go away with?
My mates, some of my family members.
What's your best away ground to visit?
Elland Road.
Why?
Hostility and the 3 points we get there.
How? Do you know the songs?
Yeah.
Favourite song?
Ooh. That's to keep it PG, yeah.
Yeah.
I would have said My Old Man, but a bit naughty, innit?
That's just about on the right side of... I like the way you've answered it. Anyway, at the match, would you describe yourself as a shy and retiring type or someone bang getting behind your team, singing?
Bit of both.
So because you're a footballer, you're watching them closely as well, tactically?
Yeah, I have to keep my wits about my daughter.
And your mates, are they watching the game like you are?
Do a bit more than me.
Yeah? And you're interested in, like, the tactics and learning from the players you're watching?
As much as I can, yeah.
Even though you're watching the experience of going?
Yeah, 100%.
Where would you like to be in 3 years' time?
In United's first team.
You think you're good enough?
Do you think I'm what, sorry?
Do you think you're good enough?
Yeah, I believe in myself and about myself, yeah.
What's the coaching like here at Manchester United? What's the youth system like?
Well, it's known to be the best, and we're proving that. We are the best at our age this year, and I think what we do on the pitch on a Saturday is showing that we're doing stuff right in training, in the training week, from every man for themselves.
So what's this season been like?
Probably my best season. As a team, it's probably been our best season and our most enjoyable season. Not just because of the results, because of the progress you've seen from August to now, but also with the experiences we've had as well. Especially me, like playing up with the 21 sometimes, training with the first team, and then we've put ourselves in a position this back end of the season where we've got trophies on the line which we can compete for as a team, and I think we deserve to get as much as we can out of it.
What's been your most satisfying result, and what's been your most disappointed, maybe one you could learn from?
Start with a disappointed, probably City away a few weeks ago, 4-1 we got beat. That was just a disappointing day overall, not just to lose to them, but just because we didn't really quite get the performance right, and we knew what we had to do going into it, but we didn't quite nail it as good as we could have. Most satisfying one. I'm going to put myself in the spotlight, my last minute winner at Sunderland at the start of the season. I don't know how I got there and how it went in, but if you watch it back, it's a massive goal in the season.
What's it like training with the first team?
Probably been my favourite footballing experience whilst I've been at United. Something I've always wanted to do. And I'm sure every lad from Manchester, Salford wants to do that as well, and that's a dream. So hopefully we can take it one further in the near future.
Is Salford red or blue, finally?
Salford red. always.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
We've mentioned him before, Andy, but a bit of a character, young Finlay, isn't he? I absolutely loved the bit at the start where you asked him a question where you very, very, very slightly stumbled over your words, and it sounded in his voice like he knew exactly what he was doing when he turned around and said, "Sorry, mate, what did you say?"
I like him. He's a Salford lad. He's a proper Manchester United fan. He's a street smart lad, and that's reflected in his football as well. And he's doing well and he's developing, and if he makes it at Manchester United, great. But I'd be fairly confident that he's going to have a good career in professional football with the attitude that I saw. And there's five or six or seven of them lads who I think will have very good careers in football. And they've had the medals. You know, when I went in there, they were about to win the league. But they're like, "We're going to win the league, we're Man United." And then they went to Wolves and then they won the league. I was a bit nervous playing against City on Tuesday, but they won that. Ethan Wheatley got the two goals. But look, there's a lot of very talented players there. But I didn't name all of them because I didn't think it was fair to. There were some situations where you've got one lad who's flying, but I know for a fact he'd just been told off because his schoolwork wasn't good enough. And I'm like, what did he say? He went, "Well, he wasn't happy about it, but he's got to get his schoolwork right." So education's important because there's a real shadowy side to youth football with discarded footballers and how it impacts on youngsters. But I asked some real cynics about Manchester United's system, and it came out with pretty glowing grades.
Like I say, the piece is full of fascinating detail. And just before we move it on, Carl, as well, I know we should mention that it's not just the men's academy that's doing well this season. The women's under 21 side have just won the Northern Division title as well. I mean, that's a great measure of the progress that the club's making.
Absolutely. So they were 3-0 down playing Leicester City in one of the final games of the season. Had no substitutes left, battled back to draw 3-3. The draw would have given them enough points to secure the title, but then they then went on to win via penalties. So huge achievement there. And we've spoken about the women's team and the development in that project and where they're going to go as well. So the fact that their academy is going from strength to strength, really, really encouraging too.
Congratulations to them. Yeah, I think the women's academy setup, you know, in the past even has been great. It's produced some very, very good footballers. Footballers, unfortunately, who had to leave Manchester United in years gone by to pursue careers in first team football elsewhere, but having a pathway on the women's side to play for Manchester United as well is obviously a very, very important aspect of the development on that side of the club as well. So yeah, congratulations to them.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So next up then for Manchester United is Burnley this weekend in the Premier League. Just before we do a quick preview to that game, Jason Wilcox has arrived, Carl. He's now been at matches as well. We understand he's going to be part of this audit of Manchester United and exactly how the first team are progressing now and the whole setup around it as technical director. Dan Ashworth, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, just about had enough puff left after running the London Marathon to aim a little jibe at Newcastle. It sounds like the club are still in negotiations with them about releasing him from his role there to start as Manchester United sporting director. Progress being made, but yeah, what's your latest take on all of this?
Progress is being made. I mean, one thing we've now learned for sure is Mr. Ratcliffe absolutely hates the concept of gardening leave. That's very clear. Jason Wilcox's role is technical director. So he was former head of academy at Manchester City, then became a director of football at Southampton, now is the technical director. The statement on the club website said he'll hold responsibility for all things on the footballing side. That's a wide remit. And from what I understand of his time at Southampton, his speciality is youth football, academy football. That's not to say he's bad at other things, just that's his speciality. And he was pretty good at delegating things that weren't his speciality to other members of staff at Southampton as well. So when we're talking about the academy, Wilcox is a good person to have in charge of things like that. There will be a point in time where he will have to report to a director of football. The easiest way I can explain it right now, or my interpretation of everything right now, is Jason will have be a leading voice on everything on the footballing side of things until the director of football arrives, and then his voice on senior player trading will then have to be, you know, will then be second in command to director of football.
I find it interesting that there's very few people at Manchester United do media, and I think that will change with Ineos, actually. So you've basically got Erik ten Hag fielding everything.
Yeah.
And maybe Nick Cox does a bit on the academy side. And I think that will change. Let's see if it does change. But I think you're going to have three or four voices, because it's weird that ten Hag's being asked about stadium development, for example, or, you know, there's different areas. So that could change. I don't know whether that's Jason Wilcox speaking more, or if Dan Ashworth or Omar, the incoming chief executive, whether he'll do media as well. Because there's been people have like, yeah, don't really want profile because a lot of hassle comes with that. But then maybe it's not fair just putting it on one or two people.
Well, it's not been the Manchester United model, has it, over the years, for other people to speak. You know, the owners clearly haven't spoken, and that's been a huge issue. But even in the levels below that, the public-facing aspect of their roles hasn't always been something that's been the same as other clubs. I mean, I've interviewed Jason Wilcox several times as the academy director at Manchester City about many different aspects around the club. And I suppose, you know, Nick Cox we've even had on the podcast in recent times, so that doesn't exactly transfer. But that's the sense I get as well, Andy, that there will be more people speaking, and we should find out more about the inner workings of the club from different people in different roles as time goes on. For what it's worth, you know, I always heard very good things about Jason's work at City. He was extremely popular. I know there was a lot of disappointment at the club when he moved on to Southampton, but they saw it as a step up going from working on the academy to then being the director of football. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on at United. Let's preview Burnley then. If United made slightly hard work of Sheffield United at times last night, Carl, Burnley's going to be an interesting challenge because they've definitely improved in recent weeks. There's been times this season where they've looked nothing like a Premier League club, but in the last few weeks, that's not been the case at all.
They've Vincent Kompany made a change at goalkeeper, and there's been a bit more stability in the defensive record. And they feel almost there in Premier League survival. So I'm sure they'll be coming to Old Trafford thinking they can have a go.
As in almost there as to having a chance of survival, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought you were saying they're staying up then. I was going to say, that's quite a bold claim, but you never know.
You never know.
They probably have to win at Old Trafford for that.
I wouldn't mind the first 40 minutes of how United played against Coventry rather than the last 40 minutes, shall we say.
And that'll be
key. Also, the injury status of two or three players will be important. Scott McTominay didn't play against Sheffield United. Marcus Rashford didn't play. I think McTominay coming back to full fitness could be useful against Burnley. And the availability of one or more centre-back would be great, because Casemiro at centre-back, I'm not sure about it yet. Andy, what are you making of Casemiro at centre-back?
I thought he was okay against Sheffield United. I don't know anyone who's touched the ball as many times as he... 140 touches he had against Sheffield United. And there was a time where he looked frustrated at the players around him. Clearly he's not the solution, though, is it? Because against Coventry, towards the end of the game, he was getting done for pace several times. And you can see his experience as he tries to pass the ball through the midfield lines. But he's not a central defender, is he? This is needs must because of the situations here. And Burnley beat Sheffield United 4-1 at the weekend. Yep. Does that mean they're going to beat Manchester United 1-0? And they're only 3 points behind Forest. I'm sure Forest will find fault with someone else when they play the next game. But 3 points is 3 points. And Burnley have picked up. They only lost one of the last five.
One of the last seven.
A bit of a struggle at...
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a struggle at Turf Moor, wasn't it? That was when Johnny Evans had that brilliant goal.
Well, I mean, the defeat they had as well was a really poor error from Muric, who was obviously the goalkeeper who came in for James Trafford. In fact, if he'd not made the error against Everton, that could have been a draw. If he'd not made the error in the next game against Brighton, That could have been a win because that ended up them drawing that game 1-1. I've been to Burnley a few times. I did the podcast from the back of my car in the car park outside the training ground the other week. I can vouch for the fact that they are feeling much better than they have been at any other point this season. Vincent Kompany much, much more pleased with the way his team are playing. He feels like they're more used to Premier League level now. They're more ready for it. They had to make so many changes last summer and bring in a lot of young players that it's taken a little bit of time. And the lads who were brought in January as well have really added to the group. A Stewart centre-half has been an improvement on what was there before. Like Kyle said, the goalkeeping change as well has improved things despite the errors that Muric has made. So it's going to be a challenging game. It will be interesting to see who's back, though, because there's 10 missing again for the Sheffield United game. And I mean, even Bruno was playing with a cast, it looked like, on his hand. And I know he picked
broken fingers, I think.
Yeah, he injured that, didn't he, in the semi-final. Like we said before, you know, Maguire, I think, was carrying something and has been for a while. So, yeah, the squad is still looking a little iffy, shall we say, in terms of fitness. But Ten Hag will speak on Friday and we may have a bit more of an update as to who's available, because Lisandro Martinez, Carl, can't be far away now, can he?
This should be Lisandro Martinez coming back. This should also be the time when Anthony Martial is back. But
he should have been back a while ago, shouldn't he?
Yeah, but Ten Hag said it's up to him if when that happens.
Okay.
We are also nearing the return period for Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
We should be getting updates about Luke Shaw in the coming weeks. I'd be surprised if he plays before Arsenal, but you never know.
Yeah, I'm in the press conference tomorrow, so I'll try and prod Mr. Ten Hag about injuries, which some weeks he gives details, some weeks he doesn't. So we'll see.
You go with the first question, and if he doesn't bite, I will try with a backup question because okay. I'll probably be there too.
Yeah, it's just like, Mr. Ten Hag. Yeah. Right, we need to talk about the 17-19 season ticket rule before we finish, Andy, as well, because I know this is causing quite a lot of debate amongst Manchester United fans at the moment. What's your view on it?
Well, there's a lot of season ticket holders who are very annoyed, so that's not a good situation for any club to be in. I don't agree that 17 out of 19 is a good idea. It's a hassle, you know, the app, getting your mates to become members. And season ticket holders resent it because it is an infringement on their historical liberties. And there is another side to it. I've had a pretty strong letter this morning from somebody saying that they agree with it because they're not a season ticket holder and they think it's really hard to get tickets. And season ticket holders are operating with immense privileges and that's locking out a lot of other people. There's 155,000 people on the waiting list for a Manchester United season ticket.
155,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
you're filling Old Trafford twice with people just waiting and more.
Yep.
Well, the ground should be bigger and maybe a journalist should write that for 20 years. Maybe someone should listen for that.
And not U-turn, yeah, I agree. Definitely, yeah.
Love it. I think that it's not too late to change the 17 out of 19. I think it leaves very little margin for error.
So just to explain, this is season ticket holders who have 19 home Premier League games that they're buying their season ticket for.
Yeah.
And they have to have that season ticket be used for a minimum of 17 of those 19 games in order to keep their season ticket for the following year, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you can pass it on to a friend, to a close member of family, to one of your contact groups. You can donate the ticket. This has been a really good thing. I think £1 million has been raised for Manchester United's foundation. This isn't just a Manchester United issue here. Man City are having massive issues with their fans, mainly over price rises. Barcelona, Real Madrid are doing exactly the same thing.
Are there a number of Premier League clubs who are in controversy with this? Nottingham Forest, you mentioned before. I mean, Tottenham have stopped doing concession tickets for OAPs as well, which is an interesting step.
So long-standing fans feel persecuted by this. And price rises, which were really, really good for a decade, they didn't rise. They rose very aggressively in the 90s and when the Glazers first arrived. And I was at the forefront of fan politics trying to stop that happening. It has calmed down a lot. I think with Manchester United, it's not about prices. It's about changing the liberties which season ticket holders have long had. I think if the club can just tweak it, and I should say must, who've had absolute dog's abuse on social media, from what I have been told by multiple sources, they've really been pushing hard on the club to try and get this changed. And some fans just don't want to see that because they don't like must. And social media is this, it just gets really, really angry and then it passes over. I remember it after the Galatasaray ticket. So what do you think? Well, give me 2 weeks to investigate properly. And when we investigate properly, we come back, oh, we don't care because we lost last night. Wait a minute, you can't have it both ways. You just want a quick knee-jerk reaction because I do not have the answer to everything. But I do not think 17 out of 19 is fair. I think it should be lowered to make it a little bit easier because there's a lot of changes. And for elderly season ticket holders, it's becoming a hassle.
Well, it's difficult,
you know, downloading apps.
It's difficult to understand what to do as well, because even, I mean, I am a season ticket holder, even the way that you can transfer your ticket into someone else's name or donate it, it's not a straightforward process by any stretch for people who maybe aren't that literate with technology.
If it's the opposite of when I was a kid. I could literally turn up to the game and pay in. And now you've got to apply weeks in advance. It's difficult. And I know there's loads of really good concessions for youth fans, but I think youth fans should be encouraged to try and make it as easy as possible for them to go to games. And people come at me with wild inaccuracies. It's so expensive these days. I'm sorry, it's like £34 to sit in the Stretford End with massive discounts going down to like £16. I have friends in America saying to me, is this price right? Yeah, it's right, because they're used to paying far, far more. I mean, you've got to protect long-standing fans. Equally, there's a lot of fans who'd like to go who are continually being knocked back and are very frustrated, and I'm getting letters about that as well.
Yeah, and you can understand that, can't you? But yeah, it definitely feels like this is a situation that's going to develop, and Andy, I know that you'll play a part in that as well, so I'm sure this won't be the last time that we talk about it on the podcast, but Burnley is next for United. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us at any point, use the email address devilspod@theathletic.com. But for the moment, we're going to say goodbye. So thank you, Andy. Thank you, Carl. And thank you for listening as well. We'll see you on the next one after Burnley.
Don't forget, thanks to Laurie.
Well, yeah, thanks to Laurie for getting up in the middle of the night and doing his thing. His little Michael Palin impression at the start, which I quite enjoyed. This is the Miami of Vietnam. Very nice, Laurie. Don't worry, mate. You'll be back in the rain soon. Thanks for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.